From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. From the Devil's Triangle to the Ralph Club, we've been hearing a lot about Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh's alleged drinking habits in high school and college. Well, what about today's college students? They've grown up in a world where sexual assault education is part of the curriculum on many college campuses, and where social media can provide an immortal trail of deeds and misdeeds. But has any of that changed how college students party now? This hour on Point, today's college drinking culture. You can join us on air or online. What was the drinking scene when you were in school? And if you're in college now, what does partying look like? Is drinking to blackout unusual or the norm? And do the Kavanaugh hearings have you worried that what you do now may come back to haunt you later? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We've got a triplet here, or a trio, I should say, of terrific guests who are joining us this hour. And first of all, let me introduce to you Madeline D'Angelo. She's a 21-year-old senior at Boston College, originally from Chevy Chase, Maryland. Full disclosure, she's also our On Point intern. So, Madeline, welcome to the program.
Hi, Meghna.
Also with us today is Brianna Pickard. She is 22 and graduated in May from Florida State University. She's currently a first-year law student at the George Washington Law School, and she's with us from Washington. Brianna, welcome to you.
Hi there, Meghna.
And from Tempe, Arizona, Jack McCarthy is with us. He is a 21-year-old senior at Arizona State University, originally from Madison, Wisconsin. And Jack McCarthy also runs ASU's Barstool Sports website. Jack, welcome to you.
Hi, guys.
Okay, so first of all, let me just get a quick sort of picture here. If I were to ask you, you know, describe what the drinking scene is like on campus where you are, how would you answer that, Madeline? Let's start with you.
So BC is a school without a Greek life, so that does end up shaping a lot of what our drinking scene looks like. But people will mostly gravitate towards hard alcohol, especially I found during our freshman and sophomore years, when alcohol might be a little bit harder to get hold of because you're not legally able to buy it. And there is a very strong blackout culture where people are generally drinking to black out or brown out.
That's the whole point?
Well, it's not entirely the whole point.
Or the goal?
I wouldn't say the goal or the point, but it is not stigmatized. It's a part of our language. It's very common to have someone say, "Ugh, like I can't even remember what happened last night. I blacked out." And at some point, it is almost a goal, depending on who your friends are or the kind of social scene you're running in within the school, maybe because of the stresses of the week. But it is a release. You're trying to reach that point of inhibition where you can't even really remember what happens the next day.
And as you said, it's not stigmatized.
No, it's not stigmatized.
Jack McCarthy, what's the scene like at ASU?
So at ASU, we actually have a dry campus, technically. I mean, that doesn't exactly mean everybody follows those rules, but I would say the blackout culture is definitely more common than you would think. But I think it's more so people just trying to relieve stress, but it definitely, people are blacking out more than you would see back in, like, when people would drink in high school and everything like that.
Does that worry you?
Not so much. I think it's more of an issue when people are doing it every single night. I mean, obviously, it kind of, like Madeline said, it kind of depends on who your friends are. Some people do it more often than not, but more people, I would say, do it, I wouldn't say for attention, but they like to do, like, crazy things at parties, and obviously you're not going to do that unless you're very intoxicated. So I definitely think it stems from either stress or trying to gain attention at social scenes.
Okay, Brianna, let me turn to you here because we're just getting kind of a survey of the drinking scenes at various places. So you graduated from Florida State and now you're at George Washington. I mean, let's just start with your 4 years at Florida State. It seems to me that a common thread already with Madeline and Jack is that drinking to blackout is not uncommon. Did you see that at Florida State?
Absolutely. And I would say that even going one step further, that was definitely the goal. You wanted to drink to blackout. You wanted to make sure that you were reaching that level where blacking out meant that you had enough fun for the night, which I think is a very scary and frightening goal to have when you're trying to relieve stress.
How often did this happen? I mean, is it something that people would do, Brianna, like, I don't know, like once a week or once every couple of weeks? Or was it the goal at every party?
I would say pretty frequently. The bars around campus had themes for every night. So each different bar had a different theme based on whatever day of the week it was. So you had some people, depending on, you know, their coursework, who were going out every night and striving for, if not reaching, this goal.
Okay. So I got to ask all three of you a question. Did you ever, Madeline, I'm going to start with you. Is this something that you've done?
No, I have not.
But you saw it?
Yes, I've seen it.
Jack?
Definitely not often, but I have had a blackout or two in my day. But I definitely would not say that it was my goal ever. But, I mean, sometimes it just kind of sneaks up on you, you know?
Mm-hmm. And Brianna?
I would agree with Jack. Not something that happened often or something that was ever my personal goal, but definitely has happened before.
Okay. I appreciate you guys answering honestly. I just had to, you know, get a sense as to sort of how close you were to this picture that you're drawing here for us. Okay. So Madeline, though, people are going to be like, you sound like a shocked prude, Meghnam. But I have to say, I mean, Brianna's the one who said it is kind of shocking to hear that in some places the relief from stress comes, or that it's thought that it comes only from reaching this point of inebriation where you can't even remember what happened. Okay, so I guess my question for you is, did your friends or people you went to parties to, or just folks in general, do they talk about any concerns around that behavior, about the consequences of that behavior?
You know, we don't necessarily talk about, again, it depends on who your friends are. Yeah. And if you have a group of friends who's going out most days of the week and drinking to black or brown out many days out of those days that they're going out, it's going to be normalized to such a point where it won't really be a concern. Maybe unless, it depends on different schools, but at BC, you can get, you basically, if the campus police find you, you'll be brought to the hospital, or we also have a help seeking policy where if someone has not only blacked out, but because in my experience, you can be blacked out so they don't remember what happens the next morning, but they can still be functioning. But if you've gotten to the point where you're throwing up, you can call help seeking.
I see.
That will be a way for students to get medical help without getting written up or a conduct referral by the school.
Okay. Brianna, let me turn back to you here, because you're first year in law school now. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we're having this conversation because all of a sudden people are thinking about what drinking culture was like 30 years ago. One thing that didn't exist 30 years ago was social media, right? Like, one of the big questions around the Kavanaugh controversy is that there's very little or no corroborating evidence from the time. That issue does not exist now in 2018, right? Because of social media, I think you can imagine any number of situations where contemporaneous documentation of bad behavior or mistakes or whatever you want to call them exists. So, I mean, like, do people worry about that at all when they're in these social situations and they're drinking and maybe even want to get to the point where they can't remember what happened?
I mean, personally, it's definitely a concern of mine. I know that there are a number of things that I probably put on Snapchat that should not have been on Snapchat or on any social media when I was an undergrad. But, I mean, being a first-year law student, we have events where alcohol is served. And I don't see the kind of hesitation that you would expect to see from first-year law students who are very cognizant of the repercussions from excessive social media posting. I wish we did, but unfortunately that's not the case. So when we go out in small or large groups, definitely on social media, it's recorded. There will be a record of it in some way, shape, or form. And I don't think that's a very positive thing. Mm.
Jack McCarthy, what do you think about that?
I definitely don't think people are as worried about it as they should be, because, I mean, nowadays you see it. You go out one night and you do one stupid thing, and the next day you wake up and you could be going viral all across the internet, all across the country. And so I definitely don't think people are as worried about it as they definitely should be.
So it sounds like you worry about it?
Definitely, I would say. Like, I am definitely not one of those people who tries to document my entire night on my social media, because I worry about people seeing it. I have parents on there that I know. I definitely don't want them seeing the certain things that me and my friends are out doing. But I would definitely say there are people out there who try and document every single bar they go to, what they're doing, taking shots, things of that nature, and just kind of doing drunk, stupid things, and I don't think that should be on the internet. So yeah, I definitely don't worry. I definitely worry about it more than most people, but majority of people don't worry about it like they should.
Madeline, we've just got about a minute and a half here to go before the break. I mean, you can stop people from tagging you on Facebook, right? You can ask people to take posts down. So, you know, is there a way to regulate what the consequences might be of capturing drinking behavior online?
I mean, I wouldn't, as you were just saying, there is a way to kind of remove yourself from being tagged on the post or to ask a friend to take it down if they'd posted it. But there's once that post is up, there's nothing you can really, if you didn't post it yourself, do to remove the post. And kind of as to what Jack was saying, there really is kind of this culture of posting stuff online during the week so that you can see what you're saying, especially with specialized school. I know that BC has a Barstool account on Instagram where it's kind of a cachet to be like seen doing something crazy on it, like drinking or whatever it is. So it does kind of, some people want to be seen drinking like that on social media, and they're not thinking forward to the consequences.
Okay, so we're going to take a quick break here. We are talking about college drinking culture today. And of course, one of the reasons why we're paying attention to it. This isn't the first time people have talked about this, of course, but we're doing it in the light of the fact that drinking culture from 30 years ago is suddenly being once again interrogated due to the confirmation hearings of Judge Brett Kavanaugh. You're hearing Madeline D'Angelo. She's a 21-year-old senior at Boston College. Brianna Pickard is also joining us. She's 22. She graduated from Florida State in May, and she's currently a first-year law student at George Washington University School of Law. And Jack McCarthy is with us. He's 21, and he's a senior at Arizona State University. We want to hear from you. You know, if you're a recent college graduate or you're in college now, what is drinking culture like where you are? You heard our three students here just say that sometimes the point is to drink to blackout to relieve stress. So what's going on your college campus that's the point you need to get to in order to relax? I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about the drinking culture on American college campuses today. I'm joined by Madeline D'Angelo. She's a 21-year-old senior at Boston College. Brianna Pickard also joins us. She's 22. She graduated from Florida State in May and is now a first-year law student at the George Washington University School of Law. And Jack McCarthy is with us. He's in Tempe, Arizona. He's a 21-year-old senior at Arizona State University. We want to know what you think about college drinking culture now. And again, as we talked about before the break, we're discussing this given in the light of the hearings regarding Judge Brett Kavanaugh. And I'm wondering, if you're in college now, is this all suddenly making you think again about what you drink, how much you drink, or the partying culture on your campus, and whether or not we're living in a world now where 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now, it could all come back to haunt you? And we've got a lot of comments coming in on social media and on our website. For example, Dawn Kathleen is saying on Facebook, she says, "I live in a college town. My residence is surrounded by college housing. Thursday through early hours of Sunday is a display of drunken debauchery. It's typical to see dozens upon dozens of weaving drunk students carrying racks of Coors to the next party. Until the culture of privilege, binge drinking, and how that plays out in college is addressed, this shows no evidence of slowing down." All right, I want to bring in one more guest into this conversation. Wesley Perkins joins us now. He's with us from Geneva, New York. He's a professor of sociology at Hobart and William Smith Colleges, and he's been conducting research on high-risk alcohol consumption in college students for 3 decades. And he's also author of The Social Norms Approach to Preventing School and College-Age Substance Abuse. Wesley Perkins, welcome to you.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Well, first of all, just reflect with us on what you heard in the previous segment, the stories from Jack and Brianna and Madeline about campus drinking culture now. Are we at a place that's different at all from where we were 30 years ago?
Well, I think what I was hearing from them is not something uncommon that you will hear students or even graduates as they reflect back have to say. We are in many ways, though, not at a very different place than we were even going back 30 years ago. If I might say quickly with a couple points of what the reality is on campus is based on scores and scores of studies, the overarching and irrefutable findings of a massive amount of research now is that, first of all, high risk or heavy drinking, sometimes called binge drinking, is significant and sometimes quite tragic, and its quite tragic consequences are prevalent, and they're at their highest levels in college students of age 18 to 24 years old, and those compared to any other age population and compared to non-college young adults of the same age. This is the heart of the problem when we talk about alcohol abuse and high risk. Those levels have declined slightly in the last decade with more innovative interventions, but the big picture of high risk in college still remains. Having said that, even given the relative high rates of problem drinking in college, it is not now, nor has it ever been in previous decades, the norm amongst college students. The best measures of high-risk drinking are about 25 to 30% engaging in occasionally in high-risk drinking with some frequency. About 20% might be described as frequent heavy binge drinkers. And it's important to know that, to put it in perspective, one quarter of students consume two-thirds to three-quarters of all the alcohol that's consumed on a campus. And this is true across all different kinds of campuses we've researched. One quarter of students are consuming two-thirds to three-quarters of the alcohol that's consumed. So the high-risk drinking is relatively concentrated. It's not the norm, but it's a serious problem a significant group.
Yeah, so Wesley Perkins, just one quick point of clarification. Maybe you said it, but I didn't catch it. When you say high-risk drinking, how are we defining that?
Well, sometimes today the word binge drinking is used, and typically what is used most commonly in measures are measures such as using five or more drinks at a sitting or more five for men or four for women to adjust for gender differences. More recent decades, we've had better measures that focus on talking about drinking five or four or more in a two-hour period, because at a sitting sometimes for college students might mean 8 hours, or it might mean a very short period of time. But the most important thing is whether they're consuming enough to get their blood alcohol levels up to a high-risk level, such as a 0.08, which is the legal limit in terms of driving. When one gets above a 0.08, one gets into the serious risk areas. And that's so if we're talking about drinking five or more in a two-hour period with that intention, as some of the students were describing, to alter their consciousness quickly, that's the kind of high-risk drinking that we're most concerned about, because that's what is most likely to produce the consequences.
Okay. Now, Madeline, you have both the advantage and disadvantage of sitting right across from me here at the On Point table, and I can see your face. You have kind of a questioning look on your face. What are you thinking?
Yeah, so what I think is interesting about what the difference may potentially be, if we are going to talk about a difference between drinking over the past decades, is that there does seem to be, at least at BC, a gravitation towards hard alcohol, which when I've spoken to my parents or people from previous generations seems to be different. People seem shocked that there are just handles of vodka or whatever's easiest to get a hold of, easily available, so like basically right off the bat your freshman year. And I don't know if maybe Brianna or Jack find that to be similar experiences at their school, but I do think that's an interesting trend.
Brianna, you want to jump in here?
Yeah, I think that there's probably a 50-50 shot at whether you're going to be drinking hard alcohol or beer, depending on the situation and what you're, you know, drinking for. Tailgates before football games tended to be more beer-heavy, whereas parties hosted at fraternities for, you know, whatever event tended to be more hard liquor centric. So I think that's definitely a notable point.
Okay. And Jack?
I would definitely agree with Brianna. Like, if you're going to a tailgate or something, it's definitely going to be beer heavy. But I think definitely for house parties and certain things like that, hard liquor is kind of like where people are kind of heading, because they don't want to carrying around a 30 case of beer while you're at a house party is a lot more inconvenient than just carrying around a bottle and sharing it with your friends.
Okay, Wesley Perkins, I mean, you've been studying this for several decades. Do you see that same trend?
Right. Well, I think it is true that depending on the particular context, you might see more beer being consumed or more hard liquor. But the fact of the matter is that we could go back decades and find punch and grain alcohol being poured for big parties that were quite common in certain circumstances back in the 1970s, 80s, and so forth. Still, nationwide, beer is the drink of choice, although in some sectors, in some schools, some hard liquor may have increased popularity. But it's when we use the word trends, we're just not seeing major trends with that regard. And the bottom line still is how many drinks you're consuming, how quickly, and if you haven't been eating at all, it can enter your bloodstream pretty quickly no matter what type of alcohol you're consuming. Certainly, hard alcohol can enter your bloodstream very quickly if you're doing 10 shots in a row and that sort of thing. But if you are trying to drink as many beers as you can in a row, that can be equally devastating too. So
yeah.
I think we have to temper the notion that, this hard liquor it's a new phenomena and it explains all the problems. It's a mixed picture.
So we have so many callers who want to join us. Callers, I promise I'm going to get to you, but I want to ask Wesley Perkins one more question here because, look, I get it. There may be some people listening to this saying, why all the shock? I mean, you just, Meghna, you sound like, a shock teetotaler who's saying, oh my God, there's so much drinking on college campuses. Maybe it's not, I mean, is it demonstrably different than it was 30 years ago? And if not, what's the big deal, Jack, Wesley Perkins? Because, I mean, I think there's an argument to be made that, yes, we've had a lot of drinking on college campuses for many decades. Perhaps we're paying closer attention to it now. But are there certain outcomes that have changed in recent years? Are we seeing greater prevalence of certain alcohol-related diseases? Or is there any measurable difference now than there was 30 years ago? Or are the people listening out there who are saying, what's the big deal? Are they right to sort of scoff at this?
Well, I would say, first of all, on the one hand, I'd be saying there are not huge measurable differences, and I've even suggested that there's been slight decline overall in the high-risk drinking in the college student population. However, it is still a very big deal in the sense of it causes the most damage, the most problems on college campuses, causes the most injuries, deaths, compared to any kind of other problem that might be raised in the college populations. Ask any dean, go to any hospital, ask any person who has administrative or student counseling responsibilities, and they'll say overwhelmingly alcohol is our major problem. But then I've got to come back with, I guess, what would be called the third hand and say, but it's still concentrated not in the majority of students, but in a significant minority who are causing the problem. They're the most visible groups. They're that 20 or 25% who cause the vast majority of the damage and create the image that everybody's doing it. So students will say everybody's doing it, but as your students said earlier, well, I don't do this, or maybe once or twice, I don't, it's not my goal. The majority of students will, a vast majority will express that. Their attitudes are quite moderate, and their behaviors, rarely will they engage in the high-risk drinking, or they don't at all, and 25% of students are abstainers. So when you look at the big picture, the norm is moderation, and it has always been that. But this significant smaller group causes a lot of damage, a lot of problem, and they create the image that it's just boys will be boys or just this is what you do in college.
All right. Michael's calling from Madison, Wisconsin. You're on the air, Michael.
Hi, Meghna. Thank you. So I attend Madison, and it's largely regarded as one of the most partying colleges across the nation. And whether or not my friends go out and drink every night, I see or interact with someone on some level who drinks every night of the week or is binge drinking multiple nights of the week. There are bars in Madison dedicated to getting people to come out and binge drink during the week. I personally have never feared for my own health during a night of binge drinking. There have been times that I've had friends needing to call an ambulance because they took caffeine pills to avoid blacking out, and that affects their physiology in other ways. But I would say that the biggest concern for binge drinking across campuses right now isn't going to be the personal safety of the person binge drinking, but rather the consequences of the things that they'll do while blackout drunk. I think that the metric of saying five drinks in a two-hour period becomes high-risk drinking is also going to be skewed based on who you're measuring.
Right.
I know that if I have five beers in 2 hours, that's not going to affect me hardly at all because I've built somewhat of a tolerance. But if you ask my 100-pound girlfriend to drink five beers in 2 hours, that's going to affect her obviously very differently.
Yeah. Well, Michael, thank you for your call. Let's go to Emily, who's calling from Cape Elizabeth, Maine. You're on the air, Emily.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I am a soon-to-be college graduate, and I wanted to express my general frustration as a student witnessing and participating in the culture of binge drinking on college campuses, because to me it really seemed to prevent the kind of work you're supposed to be doing as a college student, getting to know yourself, getting to know other people genuinely. In a way, it was sort of a mechanism for people to avoid that. You knew another person in their capacity as a drinker, as a partier, but you know there were many people who I never got to know, or who never got to know me, you know, as a sober person, really got to know them. And I think that becomes a problem, especially when you're dealing with issues of sexual assault, because when you only know someone as, you know, a happy-go-lucky drunk, it's a lot easier to dehumanize them and to take advantage of them. So I guess as someone who is sort of in the system right now, I think it's important to address issues of binge drinking because it's obviously nefarious for our health. But I also think socially it has a lot of consequences. I think it prevents a lot of, you know, relationships being formed, you know, on strong foundations. It prevents a lot of developmental work that people like me and other kids my age are supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
Just figuring out who we are, what we want.
Yeah. Emily, thank you for your call. Brianna Picard, let me turn to you there. Let me just ask you, what's your response to what Emily said? Because I think she's making a very strong argument that she at least feels that binge drinking is actually preventing students from forming deeper, more lasting relationships, or possibly even understanding each other on different levels when alcohol is, in her view, at least in the party scene, the primary medium by which these interactions are being facilitated.
Yeah, I mean, I would absolutely agree with her on that point. Whether you're going out and drinking in a social situation at a frat party, at a tailgate, or, you know, even now in law school, we go out and drink together on Thursday nights. You know, you're drinking and you're learning what that person is like while inhibited by alcohol. And you're not really taking the time to talk to them and say, okay, what's your view on this? Or what was it like when you grew up? You're talking about, okay, let's go take shots. How many can you take tonight?
Right. And Jack McCarthy, what do you think?
I agree with Brianna there, but I think it's also like a good stress reliever. Like, I mean, I understand you're not getting down to the deeper levels of meeting someone, but I mean, sometimes you don't have to learn the entire background information when you meet someone for the first time. It's kind of nice to go out, have a drink, have everyone loosened up a little bit. Like, the nerves aren't there when you're meeting someone for the first time. So I definitely see where she's coming from there, but I also think it's not as big of a deal.
Mm-hmm. Madeline?
I'm going to have to agree with Brianna here because especially at BC during our freshman and sometimes our sophomore years, people really struggle to find friends that they actually relate to. That will be a huge problem people talk about on campus because when you're a freshman, you mostly are making friends based on who you can go out and drink with, and you never form connections, or not never, but it's harder to form connections to people that you actually relate to because it's based on alcohol.
Hmm. Well, we're talking about campus drinking culture today, and we're joined by Madeline D'Angelo. She's a 21-year-old senior at Boston College, and by Brianna Picard. She's a 22-year-old. She graduated from Florida State University in May. Jack McCarthy is with us. He's a 21-year-old senior at Arizona State University. And Wesley Perkins is with us as well. He's a professor of sociology sociology at Hobart and William Smith Colleges, and he's been conducting research on high-risk alcohol consumption in college students for 3 decades. And we want to know what you think. What is drinking culture on college campuses like today? Is it a problem? Is it the same as it was 30 years ago? Or, you know, are where we are politically in terms of how we talk about sexual assault, in terms of the reality of social media, has that changed what the factors are when we consider what is appropriate drinking culture on college campuses? We'll be back in just a moment. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about college drinking culture today, and I'm joined by Madeline D'Angelo. She's a 21-year-old senior at Boston College. Brianna Pickhart joins us as well. She's 22. She graduated from Florida State in May, and now she's a first-year law student at the George Washington University School of Law. Jack McCarthy is with us. He's a 21-year-old senior at Arizona State. And Wesley Perkins is also with us. He's a professor of sociology at Hobart and William Smith Colleges. He's been conducting research on high-risk alcohol consumption for several decades. Reach out to us over Facebook and Twitter at On Point Radio. And guess what? People are doing exactly that. I've got a tweet here from a gentleman named Stephen Irving. And Stephen, I hope you're listening because I'm about to read your tweet. And the tweet is, "We're in the midst of a nationwide heroin epidemic, and you find it shocking to hear some people black out when drinking to relieve stress? What planet are you living on where that is in any way shocking, Meghna?" So that's Stephen, if you're hearing this now, first of all, I appreciate your comment. Never let it be said that On Point does not address the criticisms that come to this show in real time. But I'm going to respond to you here. First of all, I don't think it's necessarily fair to conflate the heroin epidemic with a conversation about college alcohol drinking. I think that's not fair to anyone who's suffering or dealing with the heroin epidemic, nor to this conversation itself. Now, insofar as me being shocked that students who are under 21 or under drink to blackout in order to relieve stress, perhaps I'm a little distressed, not shocked about it, because I think if that's the primary way of relieving stress or a manner in which people look to relieve stress, it does concern me a little because there's a lot of other ways to relieve stress. So let me just talk to Madeline and Brianna and Jack here. I mean, respond to what Stephen's saying. And Jack, I'm going to just start with you. Is it a major way, drinking to blackout, that people used to relieve stress? Because I'm not sure it's the best idea when you're thinking the only way to relieve stress is to wake up the next morning and not remember what you did the night before.
No, I definitely don't think that is like the major way to relieve stress. I think a major way to relieve stress is to go out with your friends and have a couple of drinks. Like Brianna was saying, you go out on Thursdays, maybe after you have a class with a couple of friends, and just have a couple of drinks. There's not, like, people aren't going out and being like, oh, I had a rough day today, I'm just going to go blackout tonight. Like, I think it stems more of, you just, it catches up on you. Like, you go to a party and there's alcohol there and you start drinking and then you black out. But there's a million different ways to relieve stress. Blacking out is not a common one, I would say.
Okay. So Brianna, again, Stephen Irving says, why do you find it shocking to hear that some people black out when drinking to relieve stress? What do you have to say about that?
I totally agree with Jack. There are a million other ways to relieve stress. I mean, especially living in D.C., which is such a health-centric city, you go for a run or you go to the gym if you're stressed and have things to do for school or work or other things that are weighing down on you. Or also, like Jack said, you go out with a couple friends after class and you grab a couple drinks and then you go home and you do your homework. you're definitely not going out on a Thursday and saying, you know, I had a really rough cold call in crim law today, I'm going to drink to excess and not remember what I do tonight.
Okay, good. So I'm glad for these clarifications because I thought I heard in the beginning part of this show, I thought I heard all of you say that sometimes the point is to get to blackout because things are so stressful. Did I mishear any of that?
No, I mean, definitely that is sometimes the point, but I think like Professor Perkins was saying, it's definitely not the point the majority of the time, at least not now in law school. In undergrad, when maybe your responsibilities weren't as much as they are for me now, you might go out on a Wednesday because it's your birthday or because, you know, you had a really rough test and do that, but certainly not the majority of the time anymore.
Okay, Madeline?
Yeah, I also think we have to draw a distinction here between the language that people are using and what they're actually doing. Because at least in my life, blackout is kind of used almost colloquially. Like, you are like, oh, I'm going to go get blackout tonight. But that doesn't necessarily mean you will. It just means it's kind of a normalized thing, and it's part of the language, almost like a slang term. So, as to what the comment online said, I don't know that we are all blacking out every weekend. I can't imagine that. But I do think it's part of our language now in a way that it might not have been before.
All right, let's go to more callers. Veronica is calling from New Orleans. You're on the air, Veronica.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I already graduated from college, and here in New Orleans, the drinking scene is crazy. Even outside of college, we have Bourbon Street, and that kind of like drives the partying scene of the nation. But I just feel like sometimes people are a little ashamed to speak truthfully about really what goes on in drinking, and it almost sounds like it's a choice to black out. When I've seen people black out, it doesn't seem to me like they do it on purpose. They just get to a point where they can't control the drinking anymore. So I guess my question would be, do you think that it's always up to you whether you're going to black out or not? Or is it more that you get to a certain point where you just can't control, and that's when, like, things with what we've seen with Judge Kavanaugh are happening, and maybe people saying that, oh, maybe he doesn't remember, or maybe he's like, just saying that it's totally not possible, it just seems to me like, I don't know, it's just like lying, basically, because you already know that whoever drinks so much as he's portrayed to with the kegs and everything, like, there had to be a blackout. And from what your guests, how they're speaking, it's like corroborating that. It's like, you can't control that you're going to get to that point sometime.
Veronica, thank you for your call. Jack McCarthy, I want to turn to you on that. I mean, you heard her question. What do you say?
I definitely say for the blackouts, especially, I think we're missing a point too, that some people out there, they have like bigger issues that nobody knows about. So that sometimes they do go out to drink and like kind of forget about their problems. And I think that's also like another reason people are blacking out there, because they have issues that you don't exactly know about. Like, I've seen it firsthand with friends and other people out at the bars. They have other issues, and they mass consume alcohol because they are trying to cover up those issues.
Hmm. Wesley Perkins, what's your response to that question?
Well, I think that if you start from a going to a party or going to a bar point of view, first of all, that's only a segment of the population, but you observe the people who are the most extreme, and you go home or talk with your friends and have stories about the person who passed out on the dance floor, or who started a fight, or who got sick and you had to clean them up, and that sort of thing. And we have millions of stories about them. It could be funny, it could be sad, it could be scary, and so forth, but we talk about it. It's what most of the talk is about. And understandably, these are situations of concern in many instances. But when we talk about them so much, and we have thousands of words for being intoxicated, but only two or three for not being intoxicated, moderation, being sober, abstinence. But you can think of thousands of words for being drunk. That reflects the talk. And so consequently, it tends to normalize in people's perceptions that this blackout culture, as we are talking about or describing it, is something that is the norm, and it's accepted, and it's not a big deal. But in fact, the blackout behavior, which can lead to very serious consequences, particularly in terms of sexual assault, are serious problems when they're there. But it's lodged in a segment of the population. But so many people don't speak out about it or against it because they think, well, it is the norm. It's what most college students do.
Right.
It's the same phenomenon of students saying, well, most students do this, but not me. That is a very common pattern. Mm. And because we just don't talk about the majority who are normal. And it's not just from survey research we can demonstrate this. We demonstrate this with anonymous BAC testing on campuses. Campuses around the country have done this and shown that there may be 20% coming home late night with intoxicated, and the rest are coming home not having consumed alcohol or have had consumed very little. So it's the biological evidence and the survey evidence is overwhelming, but it's still a serious problem.
Well, let's go to Marie, who's calling from Hartford, Connecticut. You're on the air, Marie.
Hi there. Just wanted to comment on the seemingly close relationship to sexual assault on college campuses and the use of alcohol. My daughter is a recent graduate, And she confided in me that her circle of girlfriends, six or seven of them, with my daughter being the only one not sexually assaulted by one particular young man, all alcohol involved.
And so, Marie, I mean, what does that make you think, or what's your question for our group here? Should we be...
Raising awareness, maybe a better job. I don't know. I know that the you know, the rate of experimentation, it's normal on college campus, but this connection between what we're hearing in the media about our next Supreme Court justice being intoxicated and committing sexual assault. I mean, young women have to be on alert.
Right. Marie, thank you for your call. Brianna Picard, let me go back to you on this. I guess my question from what Marie said is, when there's sexual assault awareness or education done on college campuses, maybe at Florida State, where you graduated from, how much is there, or how much part of the discussion is alcohol and its uses and abuses?
Well, I mean, we have a very famous example of sexual assault on campus being the Jameis Winston incident, which happened before I started at Florida State. But they definitely talk about sexual assault being an alcohol-related consequence at orientation, but after that, it pretty much gets dropped. And one thing that I want to make sure that we're not forgetting is that we need to be very careful talking about sexual assault in relation to alcohol and how we classify the role that alcohol plays in resulting in sexual assault. Because as we've seen, I think, pretty clearly with the Kavanaugh hearings, it's used as an excuse most times when talking about men. So he was drunk, it wasn't his fault, as opposed to when it's used for women, oh, you shouldn't have been drunk, you should have controlled your consumption more. So we just need to make sure that we're not forgetting that there's a very different way that we talk about alcohol in relation to how it influences sexual assault.
Madeline D'Angelo, what do you think?
I'm going to have to agree strongly with Brianna on that point, because I do think that we do have to be extremely careful about the language we're using. But one thing I will say is different about my experience is that my school does have a standing kind of dialogue going between the relationship between sexual assault. We've got a bystander organization on campus that's trying to discourage sexual assault, and they all are very, very vocal about the dangers of alcohol in that sense. And I think that's one of, when we're expanding it to kind of the picture of the Kavanaugh hearings, is one of the interesting differences between our times and now, especially if we're seeing that maybe there isn't that big a difference in alcohol consumption. I do think the difference we have is children of our generation have the language to describe sexual assault, and we are aware of it, yet we are still blacking out. And I think that's a very interesting tension we have going on.
Let's get one more call in here. Keith is calling from Newport News, Virginia. You're on the air, Keith.
Yes, hello. I thank you, first of all, for taking my call, and thank you for this compelling discussion. I was formerly a director of counseling for a university, and I'm wondering if anyone has ever done any comparative studies to look at the occurrence of binge drinking and this consumption of alcohol on HBCU, historically black colleges and university campuses, versus predominantly white campuses. My suspicion is that the occurrence on those HBCU campuses are relatively low in comparison to those other campuses, which it seems to be need to be, as we look at all of the incidents of binge drinking, an issue of privilege more than anything else.
Keith, thank you for your call. And Wesley Perkins, that's for you. Has your research covered questions of privilege or affluence and its correlations to college drinking?
Yes, we can. And speaking about research in general, that affluence is connected to issues of high-risk drinking, in that it's more affordable if you're more affluent and so forth. So you see those with more affluence tending to drink somewhat more. But there are bigger differences just with regard to racial categories. To speak to the person who called in, African-Americans in general drink at much lower risk risk rates as students than do white students, for example. And there's other research out there that shows that the historically black colleges that have the lowest rates, and then African Americans on campuses where it's predominantly white students tend to drink more, though not as much as the white students. They drink more than the black students in the historically black colleges. So it is something that's connected much more with white culture than minority cultures in our society. That's not to say that there aren't African-American students who have significant alcohol problems, but it is a much bigger problem among the white population comparatively.
Okay. Well, we've just got about a minute and a half left to go here, so I want to give the last word to our three college students who were with us this hour. Jack, I mean, in light of all the controversy around Judge Kavanaugh, has it made you sort of rethink drinking culture on your campus at ASU?
Definitely it makes you kind of worry about it, especially with other students. I mean, I'm definitely not going out there and blacking out like some kids out there, but I definitely think we need to have more awareness and everything, especially about sexual assault, because kind of like going back to what Brianna said earlier, it's kind of something they bring up during orientation and then it kind of just goes away. I mean, I know Madeline said they have a lot bigger voice on her campus, but I definitely think orientation, they cover it and then it kind of just disappears. And I think it's a much, much bigger issue that needs to be covered nonstop to like drill it in these people's heads, you know?
Yeah. And Brianna Pickard, your last thought for today.
Yeah, I mean, one in three women is sexually assaulted at some point in her life. And I'm not sure what percentage of that has alcohol involved. But binge drinking culture is very problematic, and we need to make sure that, like Jack was saying, it's not something that disappears after orientation, that it's, you know, prevalent all throughout undergrad and graduate school.
Yeah. And Madeline D'Angelo, got a couple seconds here. What do you think?
I mean, I agree with Jack and Brianna, and I think especially now that we have a language that's more solid to define this with, we really do need to focus on things we can do on campuses to make sure that the problem is eradicated as much as it can be.
Well, I have to say thank you to all four of you for joining us this hour. It's been a terrific conversation. Madeline D'Angelo, 21-year-old senior at Boston College, and also, full disclosure, she's our intern here at On Point. Madeline, thank you so much.
Thank you, Magna.
And Brianna Pickard, 22 years old, Florida State graduate, and currently a first-year law student at George Washington University Law School. Brianna, thank you.
Thank you, Magna.
And Jack McCarthy, a 21-year-old senior at Arizona State University, and Jack runs the ASU Barstool Sports website. Jack, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
And Wesley Perkins, professor of sociology at Hobart and Williams Smith Colleges, who's been conducting research on high-risk alcohol consumption in college students for several decades. Professor Perkins, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Magna.
And folks, keep your comments and your observations, your criticisms and your compliments coming at onpointradio.org. I'm Magna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.